afternoon or good evening, whatever it is in your part of the country on the day that you're watching this. I'm Jim Hansen. I'm doing the Golf Week Raider Program podcast. It's been a while since I've been on the air, but I'm very pleased today to have a very accomplished and unique Raider. I'm going to try to make sure we explain all the uniqueness that we have, but we're talking today to Sue Hennessy. Sue, thank you so much for doing this.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I want to begin by just immediately showing, illustrating exactly how unique you are as a Raider. I've actually got 7 different characteristics of you and your background and your experience that put them together. Even any one of them is pretty unique and important, but put them all together and it's quite a package. You're a very veteran Raider. I'm going to ask you in a minute to tell us when you started and how that happened. You're a low handicap player who regularly plays in amateur tournaments. So you play at a high level. Third, you're a woman, as people can probably tell from your voice. Fourth, you and your husband both are Raiders. Tim Hennessy, your husband, I assume, and I'm asking that again, I assume you both sort of entered the Raider program at about the same time, but I'll let you answer that. Fifth, you live in the Chicago area, and Chicago, as we all know in golf, is a kind of a mecca for both excellent private and public golf courses. I mean, so I think you've had an abundance of opportunities and probably lots of visitors who want to get on courses that you can help them with. Mm-hmm. Second, I know that you're quite an international traveler. And I want to talk to you and ask you some specific questions about the range of experience that you've had playing internationally, probably mostly as a Golf Week Raider, but I assume maybe sometimes without being right. That. And then seventh, this is quite a combination. You've recently become a grandmother.
I am.
Right? And yeah. And you'll have to tell us about the baby, the grandchild.
I'll try.
I think it's only 45 minutes, but you put those 7 things together, Sue. Do you realize how amazingly unique you are as a person, let alone a golf Raider?
Not really, but thank you.
Right. Well, tell us how it started for you as a golf Raider. Well, not as a golf Raider. I really want to go back before then and ask you about your introduction to the game. I mean, I've talked to you some. We've been friends for a few years now, and I believe, it was the influence of your father. But I want you to tell the story of how you got into golf and how your passion developed from youth to adulthood.
Well, my dad was determined, and I was the oldest of 3 children. When I was in junior high, I think he needed a golf partner because he had just kind of started golfing also. So he bought me a set of Mickey Wright girls golf clubs. And I didn't know anything about golf. I think it was 7th grade, like 13. And then he joined a country club out in the south suburbs called Prestwick Country Club, which was very new at the time. I don't think we could afford our mortgage, but my dad joined a golf club. So seriously. So we would go out and he helped teach me about the game. He got me a lesson or two and I played some junior golf and I enjoyed it. One funny note about that in my present life is that the head pro at Beverly Country Club in Chicago was in my junior golf program. And whenever I see him, I say, do you remember when I outdrove you in junior high? And he just laughs and he's like, yes, I do. So that's kind of funny. So I was playing golf and then I realized in the 70s, not a whole lot of girls played golf where I lived. So I then got introduced to tennis because a tennis club opened. My dad got me into that also. I was actually a very dorky little tiny brainiac person. And he said I needed to be more athletic. So he put me into tennis, which there were tons of girls. I mean, and then I ended up playing high school and college tennis. And I got back into golf. I did not write this in my notes. I got back into golf because I realized the guy who lived across the street I knew as a child. And I thought, I think I need to meet him again. And I know his family golfs. So I told my dad, I said, Dad, this summer I need to hit golf balls and I'll cut the front yard grass only. that's how I met my husband.
That's Tim.
That's Tim.
Yeah. So when you first started with those Mickey Wright golf clubs, mm-hmm. could your father tell, or could you tell that you had some talent for the game?
I honestly think I just wanted to be with my dad. Mm-hmm. And then I guess, you know, this is so true. And, you know, I have two daughters and a son. And if you don't know what you're going to get when you expose a child to things, that's why we need to expose children to so many different things. And that's what my dad was doing for me. I realized that as an adult, as a kid, I was like, yeah, I'll go play with you. But then I really could actually hit the ball. And it just, you know, I just really enjoyed that time.
Did he give you what? I mean, I had two children that didn't become golfers, and I now have grandchildren that I've tried to introduce them to the game to some extent. And I never know for sure if I just give them a club that they can swing and just tell them to whack it, or whether or not to give them precise instruction. How did your father handle that with you? Did he just let you play, or did he try to meticulously show you how to play?
Well, he did let me play, and they had a very, very new junior golf program. He put me in that. So I think he did it very wisely in not smothering me and putting all of what he knew about the game into it. He let somebody else do it. Mm-hmm. And then kind of watched from the side. And I think that was very, very smart.
So when he said to you, coming home from school or on a weekend, let's go to the golf course, mm-hmm. were you always ready to go? Or did you sometimes say, I've got other things to do?
No, I always wanted to go to junior golf. And we didn't live super close to the golf course. But I do remember it being really, really enjoyable. Yeah. It's a fond memory.
So you started when you were about 13, is that right?
Yeah.
You said?
And then I quit when I was about 14.
Did you, when you first began, do you remember any just exceptional shot or something that you still remember today from your youth?
You know, I remember, really remember one thing, is that I could always, always hit a driver. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. That was what gave me a sense of accomplishment as a kid, but I could hit a driver no matter what. Okay. And then of course, you know, I learned other things too. I really should have kept playing, but you know, when you're a teenager, I wanted to be around my friends. And like I had said, there just weren't enough girl golfers, which was too bad. And obviously that's different now.
So you were starting to kind of date your across the street friend, Tim,
yeah,
Tim Hennessy.
I set up and sabotaged him from the get-go, and it took him a while to figure it out. But
yeah, that's us men.
We've been married really 38 stupid. Years. He figured it out.
Yeah. So when you first started playing golf with him, how experienced a golfer was he? And I know now, I've played with the two of you many times, and I know you beat him on at least on a 50-50 basis. I think that's my judgment anyway. Did you sort of let him beat you? How did you approach the relationship with a young man and the game of golf?
Actually, I just got out and practiced some more and practiced. And actually, Jim, I would never let a guy beat me. Married to him or not, it's just not in me.
From the very start.
Yeah.
Well, that was a good precedent to set, I think.
But that's because I was exposed to sports, you know, before I started playing golf, and I learned how to be a competitor.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you start now you've gotten back into the game, you're in your late teens, early 20s, I suppose. Yeah. You've played college tennis, and so when do you start playing competitively as a golfer? It predates your golf week experience by some years.
Oh yeah,
I assume.
by a lot, by a decade, really. We got married in 1984, and in 1986, they had a really good offer for children, adult, you know, like a legacy members at our club, and he said, "Would you want to do that?" I said, "Yeah, definitely." So we did that, and then it was 86. We had our first daughter in 1989, and our second daughter in 1992, and that's the year I won my first club championship. pregnant with my second daughter.
And you say your first club championship. How many of them do you have now?
Well, some people would find this obscene, and I've been told I should stop doing that and let other people win. A couple weeks ago, I won my 28th.
Oh, my goodness. 28 club championships. Unbelievable.
Don't fault me. I'm just going for 30, and then I'm done.
Okay. So, well, besides your club championships, I know that you played in some other. When did you start to play in some state events or even national events?
It took me a while because my kids were little. But I competed on our team, which is very competitive. You know, the South District of the Chicago Women's District Golf. I played on that team now forever, and I got into other Chicago District tournaments through that. That was my segue, and then I got my handicap low enough where I could play in USGA events, and I've played in the Senior Amateur. I've played in the Mid Am, and I tried to qualify for the U.S. Senior last year, and it just, you know, people do not give enough credit to older lady golfers. You know, if you ever want to lose your money, go play a scratch older lady golfer. They will outchip you. They will outpitch you. They will outputt you. And you'll say, how did that happen?
So now let's go right into the Golf Week connection.
Okay.
How exactly did that come about and when was it?
I don't know exactly. It was 9 or 10 years ago. It was probably a little more than that when this was introduced to me by a fabulous couple who's from my hometown, and I had met her playing tee, Betty Haruska and Brian Haruska, and their son was Kelsey's age, so we knew each other from our kids at school. So she calls me randomly one day. She goes, "Hey," she goes, "you know, Brian and I were thinking that you'd be a great Golf Week raider," and I said, "Well, I said, you know, I love playing golf and I work at it. And I said, I don't know a whole lot about it." And she goes, "Oh, we can teach you." And I said, "Okay." I said, that sounds good. Just tell me what I have to do. And Betty said, "Oh, you don't have to do anything. We already nominated you." So I thought, oh my goodness, what just happened? And that was the beginning. It was actually very timed really nicely, because for several years before that, when I started getting better and I could play really hard courses, I had some aha moments, you know, where I'm like, what am I looking at? And why does this strike me? And it was such good timing. I thought, maybe this will help me learn more.
Yeah. And Tim became a raider. Your husband became a raider at the same time or somewhat later?
No, I would say about 3 years later. And then Timmy became a raider 4 years ago from now. And we really enjoy it when we can, you know, bring him on a trip or whatever.
Okay. So tell me about your, well, I'll use the phrase education as a raider. You already kind of hinted at that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you already brought to being a raider a pretty darn good background in golf, knowing how to play the game, knowing the etiquette of the game. Mm-hmm. You understood courses to some significant extent to be able to play them. What else, as you then started to attend events, and I think by at that time the program is still run by Brad Klein, is that correct?
Yeah.
Who kind of started it and was administering it for many, many years. I'm not asking specifically the role that Brad might have had in the education of you as a raider, but what would you say generally about what did you learn early on as a raider that helped you, that might have in fact given you a more mature understanding of course design than what you had as a player?
Well, I did some suggested reading. In fact, when I applied to be a raider, you had to fill out an extensive quiz and your experience. What have you read about it? And that kind of freaked me out a little bit. So I thought, we'll get reading. And then I realized through Golf Week, I was going to learn from those who were really good at it. So when I would go on a trip or when I would be with other raiders, I would ask some questions constantly. Okay, you know, what do you think about this hole? I would say I love this hole, but where are the flaws? That's how I learned. I really learned the most from being out with really skilled people.
And do you remember the first, one of the first, or even the first rating event that you went to? Because, I mean, I guess I could just say briefly that, you know, as a rater, you sometimes approach courses just on your own. I mean, if you're out traveling or whatever, and you make arrangements in a very professional way, introducing yourself as you would if you were in a business. I mean, that's the way to do it. I'm sure that's the way you've done it. But we also have what are called rater retreats, where the magazine staff puts together, and it was Brad, you know, at the head of this back then, Brad Klein, they would put together a 3 or 4 day event at a particular venue where maybe 3 or 4 courses were worth playing and rating. You might have done some ratings before you did a retreat, but do you recall the first retreat that you went to and what it was like?
I do recall the first retreat. I went by myself, and it was at the Cliffs grouping of courses. I thought, because we had property at the Cliffs at Glassy Mountain, and we had sold it. I thought, I'll go on that one. It's easy to get to. And I had never met our fearless leader and our dear friend Armin Cimaroli. I'm like, good, I'll get to meet this Armin guy, you know. So I go there, and he totally didn't make this event because of a hurricane in Bermuda where he was coming from. So I sat down with Henry Robinson and I said, who is this Armin guy anyway? He's not even here. And then I realized, oh, I should really get to know Armin Cimaroli.
We might want to say a little bit more about what Armin's sort of official status was there. Mm-hmm. I mean, when Brad was still running the program, Armin was really kind of partly a social director and kind of doing stuff that Brad wasn't doing that made sure the logistics were okay and that everybody was taken care of and everybody got off on them and that. Brad was there mainly to say hello to everybody, play the and give us a seminar or two to sort of help, you know, understand that. But Armin was on the ground. And so, and now with Brad leaving, Armin in charge of the program, so he's kind of done it all now with the help of what, you know, me and some of the people he made, he's turned into sort of co-hosts of the program. Yep. So go on. I'm sorry to interrupt, but you got to see him eventually.
<it's> funny. We're such good friends now. And I just think it's funny. I was like, whatever, who's Armin Cimaroli? And it makes me laugh, and I still laugh with him about it. And it's a great friendship, and he did so many things for us as Raiders. I am always indebted to him, and I help him out with our Raider Cup team, and that's coming up next week. Best week of the year.
I'm going to ask you about that in just a second, but when you mentioned a key word, I think, for the program that gets ignored sometimes, and that is friendships. I mean, I think if I had not become a Raider and developed the friendships over the course of the years that I've done it, a big part of my life that has been so happy and fulfilling for me would have a big hole.
Yes,
if not for the friendships that I made as a golf Raider.
And in general golfing, I mean, I have lifetime friends, but you just piggybacked on something I would have said later in the conversation. And this Raider Cup, I am with my people for 4 days, the most outstanding, fabulous women. I can't say enough about the friends I've made in golf week. And we're giddy when we all get together. It's competitive golf, but it's way beyond that.
Well, let me go ahead and go right now with this Raider Cup. I mean, tell us sort of the background, because there's been a women's Raider Cup and a men's Raider Cup, you know, for many years, and you've been probably involved in every year that you've been a Raider. Now you've got a very special Raider Cup coming up in Scotland. So sort of cover those bases for me.
Well, the one next week is our annual yearly one, almost always in the U.S., so everyone can get there reasonably. And we're going to go up to Boyne, and we were at Nemacolin last year. My winning team all jumped in the pool, and then we got reprimanded and kicked out of the pool.
I'll remember that. We've got a Nemacolin Resort retreat coming up in a couple of weeks.
In your uniforms, okay. So, next month, and I just have to add in that every day I wake up and I am grateful for every opportunity I've had especially these friendships. So 12 Golf Week women were invited to go play 12 women from the St. Andrews Golf Club. And this is an inaugural event. It's competitive, but it's going to be very social. And then our Scottish girlfriends will come back and we'll play somewhere in the U.S. next year. And hopefully that will be ongoing and it'll just be as great as our other experiences together.
I'm almost hesitant to ask this, but I'll charge right ahead. I mean, so there's 12 playing. Mm-hmm. Maybe there were 24 that wanted to play. How do you get selected? And, well, and are there ever any hard feelings for people that don't get to play?
No, I think for this one, it was so new that people didn't, you know, initially I didn't sign up because I knew I was going 6 weeks prior. And initially I didn't sign up. But then, you know, Sis had to drop out of that. And I said, Armin, I'll jump in. And I'm sure I'm going to be very glad I did.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you this, and I think it's a good place to do it. How would you describe an ideal rater? And at the same time, I want you then us to move on to what's not such an ideal rater. I think, you know, unfortunately, every rating program's got some of the latter as well. But how would you describe? I don't think there's any one type. I mean, I think lots of different personalities can be very, very good raters. But if you had to sort of point out some of the major characteristics of someone who's really a good rater, both in terms of the whole package, not just in terms of their ability to understand golf course design, but in terms of the whole approach to the experience.
I would say first and always first is handling yourself properly when asking for access to rate somebody's golf course, following through with a very sincere thank you, and being a good steward of Golf Week when you're out at these courses that you've been invited to. I think that's number one. Number two, what I would say about good raters know that, and this kind of segues back and forth into what I find to be a slightly aggravating rater, is a good rater doesn't go out there to go play the top 100 and get that under their belt and say, I played the top 100. That's my opinion. A good rater goes and plays courses that are requested. We get, as you know, we get courses that we're requesting raters. Maybe they've done a renovation. Something's up. They want a second look. I think good raters go to all sorts of golf courses. Like in Chicago, we have very good public golf courses. Some are more under the radar. And I really like going there. I like going there and really taking a look at it. I always like talking, to the obviously the pro or director of golf, but I like talking to the superintendent if I can talk to him, you know. And I think that's what a good rater does. Just really be a good example for so other people will maybe get invited to go rate in the future. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. What other aggravations do you see sometimes in the raider population?
I would say that occasionally, and I know this firsthand because I have friends who are at big, big golf courses. Occasionally, people just kind of glomming onto somebody just so they can go play their home golf course, which is fine if you're invited. But if you ask somebody 5-6 times, I've actually educated some of my the people that I've invited to be raiders. I'm like, you don't have to do that. No, just because I don't want them to be, you know, constantly badgered about taking these people out. Because a lot of these courses, you're not going to get out there as a raider just calling up.
Right. What about raiders that I mean, it was, I think, especially when we're on a retreat and we're playing with other raiders, some we probably know, some we don't know, they're new ones or whatever. This is one of my things. So many people are not that, I mean, I like playing for a score and I usually try to keep track of my score, but there seem to be too many raiders that are just out there like they're playing some kind of competitive round. I mean, Raider Cups are one thing, they are competitions, but when somebody is so into their own game that they're not conversing as a raider with other raiders that are not really, they're no fun to be playing with as a fellow raider. Don't you think we have too many of those too, or not?
We have a lot of those, but you know, that's what you have at every club. Yeah. You know, yeah. You got people who are very self-centric and into what they're doing on the golf course. I personally think, who doesn't want to play well, especially in a course that you might be excited about playing or you've never played. But the fact of the matter is, I don't want my score to get in the way of looking at these holes, looking at what I think is great, looking at what I think might be a little bit weak. And, you know, like in our criteria, one of my big things is, you know, is this a modern course or a classic course? What did they do with what they saw? And would I want to play this like a couple times a week? Mm-hmm. That's what I'm doing out there.
Yeah. Now, you are a very good player. Number of rounds, you've smoked me every time. But what do you think about the issue of, and it's a leading question because I think I know how you're going to answer it, but does a really good low handicap golfer who has other qualities that are good as raiders as well, the other things you've talked about, versus a not very good golfer that's maybe a 18 or 22 handicap, but is socially very good.
Yeah.
Does a good player make a better raider than a really high handicap player that can't really play, can't hit the shots that the architects put out there?
I know exactly what you're saying. And I think that of people who are maybe even as high as 30.
Yeah.
I used to think, and it was kind of ignorant on my part, I used to think, how can they even do that? But within the Raider program, I think we also need to reflect who golfs in America or anywhere else. Who's out here, and are they able to enjoy it at their handicap? You know, I look at that also. Sure, if you can play holes, you know, in regulation, you see how the course is designed that you need to figure out how to do that. You know, I understand that. But, you know, I think we learned during COVID that golf should be welcoming for everybody and should actually be looked at from different perspectives. What I will say as a woman, a lower handicap player, is that I look at whether or not they've jacked around our tee boxes. It sounds so petty, but when your tee box is thrown in the middle of a fairway or in the middle of a big patch of rough and they stick two markers in the ground and mow it tightly, that to me is very aggravating. And a lot of times they'll put the tee so far forward that it takes out a really nice part of the hole. And sometimes I'll play back just because of that. Yeah. I want to see the whole hole.
Right. Oh, I'm glad you brought this question, because one of my unique characteristics is that you are a woman. We have, I don't know if we have half as many women as men. You know, I think we have a good number of women that mm-hmm. are raiders and have been for quite a while. And, mm-hmm. And I think what you're talking about is really an important issue and does come into play a lot in how the ratings are done. Do you find, now you've been a raider, you've been a player for 3 decades or more.
Yeah.
Have you found as newer courses get designed, that the sensitivity and consciousness of needing to accommodate, not just accommodate, but do a really good job for women who are going to play the golf course, that architects and course owners have a better, that they do a better job of setting them, of having golf courses not just set up in terms of where they place the tees, but actually creating the proper tees and everything for women? Or do you think it's still as much of a problem as it was when you started?
That's a really good question. And I do think that it's aggravating. And this isn't the golf course's fault. When you walk up, when somebody says to you, our red tees are X amount of yards, I said, well, I don't usually play the red tees, so thank you. But you know, these courses have multiple tee boxes. I think that's very good. But I think it also needs to be reinforced that even a lot of men golfers need to play not the whites or the blues or anything. Like, they need to play the right yardages for their handicap, not just ladies playing forward. I think if you're really going to enjoy a course, don't beat yourself up, especially if it's difficult. So, I mean, that's sort of my answer to that question.
Do you think that men, and this would be consistent with the point you've just made, do you think men, generally speaking, are more stubborn about that than women are in terms of the being adaptable, not only to their abilities, but to their age, you know? And
yes, I do think that that's still fairly pervasive. You know, it's kind of the, you know, a little bit of a macho thing. Well, I'm not going to play the next forward tees because my friends will make fun of me. But I also do see, even at my own course, I play beautiful Midlothian Country Club in Midlothian, Illinois. And we have added sets of tees for our senior men. And you know what? It's actually working pretty well because everyone has an option then. And it's not something that makes you look like a lesser player. I think it makes you look like a smarter player. You know, are you taking advantage of what is offered to you and not, you know, just killing yourself?
Do you still find, and this sort of goes beyond the Raider issues that we're talking about, but do you find that there is a male attitude that women golfers are just inevitably going to play slower than men, and that there's concerns about tee times and progress of play and even availability of tee times for women at some courses?
Yeah, it's even at my own course, I can't play on a weekend morning.
You can't? Oh,
no,
my gosh.
It's never changed, but we have a very good pro who gets us out as soon as he can get us out. We've got a great pro shop staff. And cynically, I enjoy when we're on vacation or something and guys are like, we got to play with a woman. And Tim will say to them, it's okay. And then I get up there, and, you know, nice drive off the first tee into it. I should have asked them if they wanted to bet. I don't bet really, but I would. But I'll tell you a really funny story about that. The first time I played Pebble Beach, and I haven't played there a lot, like twice. The first time my husband surprised me, our second child was a baby and he knew I needed to get out of Dodge. He surprised me and took me to Pebble Beach. So we go there and we get paired with two Japanese guys. There's a lot of Japanese and Asians who come and play Pebble. And we heard them kind of mumbling like, okay, you know, whatever. And by the third hole, they said to Tim, oh, she hit a long ball.
Yeah.
And I took great pleasure in that.
Yeah, I imagine you would. Yeah. I want to move to another quality in you, and that is your international experience. Mm. Tell us not to recall every international trip you've made, but in terms of the rating retreats we've had, we started maybe 10 years ago to try to schedule more international opportunities.
Yes.
And speaking for myself, I mean, it's not that I haven't had great times in the States and in Canada. I mean, that's also international. We've had some great retreats. I know we just did one up at Banff. We've been to Nova Scotia. Hopefully we'll go some other places. But the trips abroad, there's a special bond when you're when you're traveling together for 10 days or 2 weeks with a group of their spouses, and you're eating dinners with them and breakfast, and you're traveling in the bus from place to place. Yep. There's just such a bonding.
Well, don't you?
Yeah.
And mostly good things.
Mostly good things. That's right. So tell us about some of the international trips you've made, some of your favorites, and some of the special features of being part of one.
I think I can honestly say I've never been on a bad international trip. Whether it, like you said, to Canada, you know, going to Nova Scotia, playing Cabot, playing Highland Links in Prince Edward Island, going to a giant, you know, a giant, like, not clam, I don't eat shellfish, but just going up there, it just blew me away, the whole thing. And the golf was beyond, even though the weather was horrendous. But yeah, well, we went in October, so
yeah.
Armin's going to be mad at me for saying that. So I think, early on, I did the Spain and Portugal trip. 2 days before that trip, I severely sprained my ankle, and I had to go to an orthopedic guy at 9 at night. And I said, well, you know, I'm going on a golf trip in 2 days. He put me in a boot. He said, you'd have been better off breaking this. He goes, you're not going to be playing golf. I said, okay. Then 2 days later, I got on the plane in my boot, and I played in my boot. And
I remember that. I was there.
Huh? Yeah. And you know what? I think it was actually good because it really made me pay attention to my stability and my base. So that's a funny story. But other remarkable trips, there's so many. Denmark, Sweden, and honestly, Thailand and Vietnam. That anybody who loves golf and will travel to golf should pay attention to Vietnam. A very young country. They have at least 1,200 miles of unspoiled seaside coastline, and that place is going to bust out, in I think. Other places I really liked, we just got back from Scotland. We've been there without Golf Week before. And I don't know. I mean, how can you say any of them are bad?
Well, I know one I want you to mention, and Australia and Tasmania, and especially, I think, don't you have a story about Tim and the airplane flights we had to take to King Island and from King Island to Tasmania?
Well, King Island, as you know, was a rare opportunity. You know, he opened that course for us to come play it. I mean, it was very immature, but
Tell everybody where that is. Where is King Island? King
Island is a little island just, is it just south of Tasmania?
Well, no, it's due south of Melbourne. I mean, yeah, it's kind of to the west of Tasmania.
That's where it was, but it's very small. And Tim's not a big small plane flyer, let's just say. So I had to lie to him. I think the airport's pretty good size. We're not going to be on a small plane. So then we get to this airport, and he looks at me like, you know, I think I'm going to kill you. So I said, you go on the plane with, you know, Leon and Michael and our other friends, and I'll go on the other plane.
Oh, you went on separate planes.
Okay. Oh, we did. We did. And I just didn't want to be with him on the plane. So, you know, we go on this plane, and then we come into King Island, and it's a grass runway. Uh-huh. And the controls, quote unquote, tower was a tiki hut. So that is a hilarious memory. And he got out of the plane, survived it, and it was a remarkable experience.
Yeah, and then we took the same planes, I think two planes, from there to Barnboogle.
We did.
On the coast, right on the coast of the northern coast of Tasmania, northwestern coast.
Yeah.
And that was a combination of sand and grass runway too, right?
Yes, it was a little more sophisticated. still not in Tim's flying wheelhouse, you know.
Right. But the golf, I mean, the golf of that trip was spectacular. We started in Melbourne and played all the courses in the Sandhills area, Royal Melbourne, Victoria, I can't remember them all, but the courses were so good. And then
Royal Melbourne, just unbelievable.
Yeah. And then we made the trip to King Island, to Tasmania, where we played the two courses, the Doak course and the Crenshaw course at Barnboogle. And then we flew to Sydney, and we played some in the Sydney area that were pretty decent, too. Yes. So, yeah, I mean, so to raiders that have not made international trips, I mean, I think it's kind of a no-brainer to tell them you got to pick one or two of those out. And you know, they're not cheap to go on, but the access you get to the courses, you just couldn't arrange probably on your own. I mean, not on the schedule that we get it arranged.
And there, to me, you know, things have gotten more expensive. You know, there's been obviously ownership changes in Golf Week and that, but still, every time I'm on an international trip, I just say to myself, you know, this is it. Mm-hmm. So good.
I sometimes, if I'm having a hard time falling asleep, sometimes memories just flash and they come out of nowhere. But other times, I think you got to sort of tease them out. And so I'll try to really hard to remember, and it does kick in. I don't remember everything. I sometimes try to play the routing.
Yes.
And boy, it's kind of, you know, many golf courses as we've played. I'm going to ask you how many you've played and rated, but we played so many that, you know, some of them I can remember almost every hole and some of the shots that I've hit, but others, gosh, there's just so many holes. There's no way to remember them all. But I can remember, like, when we were on King Island, I remember we had like some of us stayed in like a hotel or motel, and then others stayed in kind of little houses that were over on the water.
Oh, we were in the motel section.
Well, we remember we had a dinner there, and only the thing I remember is that we had meatballs made out of, it wasn't kangaroo, what's the other name? The wallabies. We had wallaby meat, because the population wallabies.
Meatballs.
Oh, you didn't eat them, huh?
No.
you had to try them. You got to go back now. You got to try them.
Well, it's kind of like eating haggis in Scotland for me.
Oh, well, that I can skip. I've done it, but I've done it once. I don't need to do that again. But
been there, done that.
Yeah. But those are the kinds of experiences that you have. I mean, and it's not just getting to really know the other Raiders. I mean, you get to know them pretty darn well, but you do meet locals, you know. There's members of staff and the golf pros there and tether attendants and caddies that you have, you know. Yeah. I mean, we had caddies that were, you know, from that are locals. So I always ask the caddies lots of questions about the place. I'm not focusing just on the golf. I mean, that's another silly thing. You go all the way over there and you're meeting someone who lives in Tasmania and you're going to talk to them just about golf. I mean, that's nuts.
But listen, Jim, that's you and me and a lot of other people, but there's a lot of other people.
Yeah.
Like we already talked about, but I, what was a really amazing experience with caddies was in Thailand and Vietnam.
Oh my goodness. Tell us about that.
All of the caddies were women. And this was an admired and respected profession. I think they made very good money for living where they live. A lot of them had families. I loved walking around with those women. I mean, I loved it. And this also goes back not only for Golf Week, but being a good steward from the country that you are really.
Absolutely.
I think it all kind of blends in together. Being a good steward for our Golf Week program, but also just being a good traveler.
Well, and I mean, one thing that I'd really hate in those circumstances, and unfortunately, I don't think I remember it happening to any grave degree, but you don't want to be the ugly American over there, you know. Golf can bring that out in some people.
Yeah. And the more, I was very lucky to start traveling at a fairly young age. My parents, like I said, they couldn't really afford to travel. So they threw the three of us in the back of a Country Squire station wagon, and we drove every state east of the Mississippi. That's how I got the travel bug. And that was my parents' intent.
Yeah. Do you go into a given year with a particular plan to play a certain number of retreats, or you just look and see when the schedule gets released that, oh, I've got to do that one and I've got to do that one? I assume that's kind of the approach. Do you plan to be as active as a Raider as you have been now that you're a grandmother and you've got grandmother responsibilities?
Well, I do, within reason, plan on continuing that, because like we've said, it's just the greatest thing. But I really pick and choose more now because I've been a lot of places, and there's just so many great places in the U.S. to go play. Like the Scotland retreat this year was really good. We're doing Ireland next year. And I have not been, unlike other people who have already gone on these trips, I haven't played those courses. So I jump on the ones that I really think are, very, very worthwhile, because it's expensive. I mean, they're airfares and, doing the whole trip. But it's always worth the investment.
Yeah. And so what places would you have in mind? I mean, people always talk now about bucket lists. I mean, do you have certain places that you've not gone to play golf that you really would like to go?
Oh, I am probably very low on the list of how many countries people have played in. I think I've played in like maybe 15, 16 countries. But My short list, and I don't know if I can do it this year. Sorry, Dave. Is Lofoten Lynx in Norway, which is above the Arctic Circle. I just have this bug in my bonnet to go play there and see it.
Well, you're Scandinavian, as I am, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'd like to play in South America.
Mm-hmm.
There's a hand trip coming up that we couldn't do. I'm sure that will be remarkable. But I always go back to also, I'm not going to get everywhere, but I just want to be really happy that I got where I got.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And now that you have just the one grandchild, correct, at this point? You've got twins.
10 months old.
And they're only like 10 months old.
Yes.
So tell us about being a grandmother and a golfer, and are you going to make sure those twins play golf or just let them go?
My son-in-law really likes to play golf, and I think maybe their first birthday we'll be buying a little mini set of plastic golf just to get you know, the idea in their parents' brains, which I don't think I really need to do, but I just think it's cute.
Yeah. Well, the Raider program, as it stands today, is probably larger than I think it's ever been in terms of the numbers.
Really?
I try with the podcast to be very honest about the situation. If you look at where we're at now, and this will be my last question for you today. We might need to do this again. I've got so much to talk to you about. How would you compare the program today, as large as it is, with the program when you began? I began in 1997. I was there when it was really, really, it just got started, and it was quite small. But in your own experience, how has it changed? How has it changed for maybe the better? And how maybe has it changed for ways that maybe we need to rethink a bit?
Well, I've brought in, in all honesty, I'm very, very, very picky who I would bring into Golf Week. Very.
You'd reinstitute the questionnaire, you think?
I would.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not to the extent that it was, but I think you have to realize you got to do some homework, you know, to really contribute to the program. I think it's a little big right now, but we've got some really good Raiders, and I'm glad though that also they're really weeding people out who never contribute. They just want to say they're a Raider, you know, and I really don't care for that. And I don't think really that Golf Week itself cares for that. So it's big. It's a little too big, but I think they've got their eye on it. And, you know, like anything, it's always quality over quantity.
Right. Right. Well, Sue Hennessy, it's been a great pleasure and honor for me to get to know you over the past decade or so. And looking forward, you know, I was supposed to go to that Scotland trip that you went on a few weeks ago. And because of my, you know, I have hip replacement surgeries coming up in the next year. And I could have tried to arrange carts. You know, I can't walk a full 18 without being in recovery for the next week or so. So I just thought it was not a good idea for me to try to go get myself fixed up. I mean, I still can play, but I need to be in a cart and then be ready maybe next spring to do as much walking as I would need to do on mostly international trips. I did play Pine Valley for the first time, and they wanted me to try to walk the entire course. And on the 15th green, the caddies got together. The members I were playing with didn't suggest it, but the caddies called the shop and said, "Bring a cart out for this guy." I played the last three in a cart and was able to play the full round. But again, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and being so candid. I knew you wouldn't be any other way. That's just who you are. And say hello to Tim for me. And we will. I really am anxious for the rest of the Raider and the listeners to our podcast to get to know a little bit more about you. Thank you, Sue.
Well, I appreciate it too, and in our friendship. And I'll just close by saying what I said early on, that yes, it's all about playing great golf courses, but in the big picture, it's all about who we're out playing with.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Sue Hennessy.
Take care.